Today on the Callahan Podcast, we got questions. We got questions like Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Why does he want businesses to go bankrupt? Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, why does she want young minority people to be unemployed? What is wrong with these people? And of course, the big question, when is Andrew Cuomo going to be taken away in handcuffs? When is he going to be held accountable, responsible for all the deaths and destruction in New York's nursing homes? We'll talk to our guy, Scott Mutrin, about that. But also we have sports. We got real sports, live sports Sunday. And the whole country, most of the country, is hoping for one thing. They're hoping Tom Brady finally chokes. That's what they're hoping for. Tom Brady finally chokes in the clutch. We'll find out Sunday afternoon. I'm Jerry Callahan. This is the Callahan Podcast, brought to you, as always, by our friends at DCU, Digital Federal Credit Union. Whether you're buying your first home, your dream home, or looking to refinance the home you love, DCU may have the mortgage program to fit your needs and, more importantly, your budget. The mortgage experts will walk you through the application process and help remove the hurdles that can make it a difficult and confusing process. They'll bring you right up to the front steps of home ownership. Learn more about rates and programs or to apply today at dcu.org/mortgage. DCU is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 466914, insured by NCUA. Membership required. All right, Callahan, let's do this.
This is the Jerry Callahan Podcast.
We're live on Facebook, Mute. Come on, pay attention. Here, there's one thing. There's lots of things you don't know about me, Mew. We've only known each other for a few months, but there's one thing I've been saying for years. I've felt this way my whole life. I don't like space. In fact, I hate space. I don't watch space movies. I've never sat and watched the Star Wars, as any Star Wars movie. I'm against the Space Force. You know, I'm a Trump supporter, but the Space Force is silly, even though it has a new flag. I don't care about NASA generally. Space movies, I'm not into. You come on this morning before we start recording, you start talking about this alternate parallel universe. I saw the story. I read about a paragraph. I don't understand it. You're into it. So let's get this out of the way. Tell me what it means.
You think he's doing an interview today?
Not the universe. Does that mean there are more planets?
Well, no, it just means everything like goes reverse. It's like Benjamin Button. So like you get to make your mistakes and then they all get erased. Like they never happened. It's beautiful. Right? Just think about all the consequences.
I don't know. You've lost me already. I know Colin doesn't understand what you're talking about. Yeah, you've lost me already. There's an alternate universe. What does that mean?
Time goes in reverse.
It's not in this realm. It's not like off past Pluto.
No, NASA's saying that there's a parallel universe where everything, time goes backwards. So it's like basically a rewind button. It's unbelievable.
If you went there, you would like have hair in a few years.
Well, it depends when I went there. If I went there now, I'd have to wait a cool 24 years. I would go back and then I would start. But 24 years from now, I would have a full head of hair and it would look great.
All right. Well, I've made Cullinane our Barstool correspondent. He's into all the Barstool gossip. He reads about it, listens to all their podcasts, loves the Barstool, the caller daddy girls. Maybe you can give us an update later on that day, but you can be my space correspondent because I don't care about space and I don't read stories about alternate parallel universes. I don't understand it. And I don't think it matters. It always bugs me when we invest billions in NASA, when we have real problems. You know, we have this huge debt, this deficit. We have, I don't know if you're aware of this, we have a pandemic going on and Trump's in the White House waving the Space Force flag, literally. And I'm going, not now, Chief. How about you put that off to another day when things are better? Right now, we have real problems. And one of them is not that we don't have a Space Force, that we haven't gone to Mars.
You obviously didn't watch Armageddon with Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck because they went up there.
When Bruce got on the satellite, the meteor, he got on it and went in it. I thought that was a
documentary. Yeah, and then he pulled the suit out. What a great dramatic move. That was a tearjerker when Ben Affleck had to get back up.
Bruce Willis real, too.
Told him to take care of Liv Tyler, his daughter. What an emotional moment. That was really great. And he saved the world, you know, the bravest guy in the world. So, I mean, you should want to have the space program, Jerry, because there may be a meteor someday. The way things are going 2020, it may be on its way right now. Who knows?
I that's something I say, you know, it might happen, but what are you going to do about it, right? You only, as they say, you know, in sports mute, you only control what you can control. And we can't control whether a meteor is going to hit us. And if it does, we should send Bruce Willis up. He's got nothing else to do. Bruce Willis. I like the movie with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney when they were out in space, and then she lands like in the mud at the end, the red mud. Oh, you don't know whether it's
Earth. Oh, yeah. What was that
one word? The title is one word.
Yeah, it won an Academy Award, but it's like the whole movie was shot in some weird way, and she was the only character for most of the movie because George Clooney like died in like the first 10 minutes.
He
dies,
but then he comes back as a dream or something or a hallucination. And the other, I didn't mind Matt Damon on Mars. That movie, and I'll tell you why, it reminded me of like Castaway. There's some movies where you spend the whole time or much of the movie wondering, you know, what would you do? Could you do this? Like Castaway. Didn't you watch Castaway with Tom Hanks and say, what would I do? Would I survive? Would I, you know, would I be okay? Would I get off the island? Would I just die there? Would I hang myself like Tom Hanks tried to do in that movie? Same with Matt Damon during that movie, saying, you know, can I do this? Could I grow potatoes and survive on Mars for, I don't know, how long was it? 2 years or something? So it was okay. Those movies are okay. Much better than, you know, Star Wars or Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I don't care about any of those movies. And I don't care about your alternate universe.
You like the movie where Matt Damon made potatoes out of shit and ate them, and you didn't like any of the Star Wars movies? Really?
I don't
like
even watch
the Star Wars. I think I would have died for that. I don't know
if I'd be able to either, or Lost in Space, or any of those shows when I was a kid. They just, I don't know. They don't, I can't get into space. Sorry. But we got a lot.
You're the anti-sci-fi crowd. I get it. Not a lot of people like sci-fi. It's all right.
Before you go too deep, because we got a guest coming on in a little bit, but I do want to know. So I'm going to take shit for this. One of the Jerry Callahan things, that the common themes that come up that you hate space now. I didn't know the space thing. I knew you hated wrestling. What else am I missing here? Like the EEI people are going to be like, no, he also hates X, Dave. You didn't bring up. So what are the other things?
I hate liberals.
You know, we didn't know that one.
Now we're getting watched.
I mean, I don't hate. I hate wrestling. I just hate looking at it. I hate wrestling talk. I hate wrestlers. I mean, I hate the whole thing. I've been to wrestling shows. They're awful. Terrible influence on our children. If you let your child go to a wrestling show, then
terrible influence on our children. A wrestler died yesterday, basically telling the people trying to save him, "Go get my son." He died. What was the wrestler's name? Did you read that story?
I did. He got caught.
He looked like a stud, but you know what? It's unusual that a guy drowned, because usually these guys die, you know, of drug abuse or, you know, of their heart explodes because they've been on steroids for so long. So I don't know. He had a good long life for a wrestler. I don't know his name. I don't care.
Shad Gaspard.
Huh?
Shad Gaspard was his name. He got caught.
Grown men that talk about wrestling, they disappoint me. They're more important things to discuss, you know?
Old school WWF logo, not WWE. That's old school WWF.
I wore it to WrestleMania 30. What is it? WWF? Now,
yeah, they got sued because
I think you should have had a show when Jerry Stiller died, to have Jerry airing of grievances, where he can list his own Festivus in honor of Jerry Stiller to talk about everything that he hates and people that piss him off. I think that would have been a great show.
Called the Jerry Callahan podcast. It's everywhere. Right.
It's kind of an ongoing theme. We do that. We do that most days. I tell you one thing. I don't know if you're aware of this, Dave. I hate the Boston Globe. You wear that?
I didn't know that.
That's little known fact. And I've gotten to the point where I have to, once in a while, whether you or somebody else points it out to me, I have to clear out my history on my computer, because you're allowed to read a couple of free stories a month. The Boston Globe costs 99 cents for 6 months, way overpriced. I can't afford it. I don't want it. So I have to clear out my history just to read a story occasionally in the Boston Globe, and I had to do that yesterday because of this amazing story. It is, and I'll say it again, Boston Globe used to have a comic section. They don't have it anymore because they don't need it. The rest of the paper is just such a joke. It's laughable. It's funny. It doesn't really bother me anymore. It just makes me laugh. And they have this column that is, there's two things that is in every column in the Boston Globe, just about. A, it's really poorly written. They don't have good writers anymore, except maybe Jeff Jacoby. The rest of them are hacks. They're you know, like sixth grade writing level. This would be one of them. And you got to hate Trump. You got to hate everything about Trump. You got to hate, you know, every right, every Republican. That's what you do. That's how you get a job at the Globe. But this, you made me do this. Actually, I did it this morning. I cleared my history and I read this column by Janae Osterheld. Now, I don't know. Is that a man or a woman? Janae, I've never heard the name before. We think it's a woman, Dave. You think it's a female?
Yes, we think so.
I had to read it because she attacks our guy. Our guy. I don't know. Did you hear Frank Mendoza with us yesterday? Mute. Frank Mendoza owns Monica's Trattoria in the North End, and he's now a folk hero. He did one interview on TV, and it went viral, and it, you know, Portnoy tweeted it. Then the president retweeted it. He's a big star now. We had him on yesterday. If you didn't hear it, he was great. He's not backing down. He's ready to open his restaurant. He's fed up like every small business person. You know, he's trying to save his business while the forces in government around here, the mayor, the governor, the Globe, are working against him, trying to ruin him, trying to put him out of business, trying to put all his employees out of work. And I knew the Globe would come out against him. They don't like small business people, especially minorities. His family's from Brazil. He's a hardworking guy. They hate that. They like the non-working class. They support people who do nothing, collect checks. That's the Globe's kind of audience now. But this was incredible, Cullinane, in this column by Janae. She says, she calls, let me just read one paragraph. It's so poorly written. It's not my fault, but she's against, bringing the economy back, opening up anything. She's against gyms. She's against small business people. She wants this economy to completely crash. And she writes about Frank Mendoza. She quotes him saying that he worked 25 years to get here, 25 hard years. I'd rather die than lose my business. That's what he said. That's what lots of small business people think. We've talked to a few. I have friends. They would rather die than lose everything they've built in the last 25, 30, 35 years. And she says, and he wants to take his customers down in the process. Mendoza admitted he hasn't practiced social distancing. No one should have shut down their business due to this pandemic, but it's not your right to risk lives. All this time, I thought those sandwiches were so good because they were made with love. No more murder subs for me.
Yes.
This writer, actually, someone wrote that, edited it, and put it in the Boston Globe. This man who wants to
extra mail? Business,
serve food, she says, those are murder subs.
Well, it's actually a good review, though. It's a good review because it tastes good. It's just going to kill you. You know, like it's the best he's going to get, to be honest with you.
Now, he doesn't come out with a murder sub. Yeah, he doesn't introduce a new murder sub out to his menu. He's missing a huge opportunity because I'll take a large murder with extra mayo.
I tipped him off as soon as I saw this. I took a screenshot of that thing and I texted him, and I wanted him to say something crazy, but he just wrote back, "What a joke! Let them say it. I don't care."
Put up a murder subs. Here's the thing, though, is the Boston Globe. I mean, John Henry's, he's losing a fortune, but he doesn't care. He's like, you know, Jeff Bezos. It's a vanity project. I mean, he doesn't care. The revenue's in the toilet. The circulation's in the toilet. Doesn't matter. He wants to have a voice. So that's why the Globe, he props up the Boston Globe. So he pays this person, I guess, Janae, who's an awful writer. But I would think you would want your writers to be informed. You'd want them to. This is the biggest story of our lives, this pandemic. You would want them to be you want them to be, you wouldn't want them to be ignorant, right? You'd want them to understand the issue. This person is just dumb. I mean, what the hell is a murder sub? I mean, is this person like over 60 and obese? Because if it's,
I know not, the exact definition, actually. According to her, a murder sub is a sub that is cooked by an individual who is not who has admitted that he is not properly socially distanced during this virus, during this pandemic. That is the definition.
So I have a question though along those lines: is what is the mortality rate of Corona is now at 100%, so that everyone that gets it dies? Is that what it is? I could have sworn
we talked about things that I can't stand or I can't tolerate anymore. I've reached that point, Mute, and you have too, I think. Where you just, I'm all for discussing this. I'm all for debating it, but you got to read up. I mean, you got to understand. You got to know that this pandemic, this virus, is not killing children. If you don't know that, you're just dumb. You're just not paying attention. You got to know that you don't have to wear a mask while you're running or riding your bike. There's no evidence of outdoor transmission, particularly when you're by yourself. That's not how people get it. You know how they get it? We'll say it one more time. By staying at home, by staying indoors. That's how it is transmitted. That's how it is transferred. You don't get it. You don't need to put a mask on your four-year-old child. If you do that, you might as well have a thing across your forehead saying, I am stupid. If you put a mask on a four-year-old, you are stupid. Not only that, I think you're dangerous. I think you're scaring the kid unnecessarily. I mean, the fact that we keep kids home from school today, now, after all we've learned, is insane. Kids should go to school today. Like right now, they should be getting up and going to school. These suburban soccer moms are these crazy, ill-informed liberals, you know, Boston Globe types, these Marty Walsh types, these Ayanna Pressley types, just don't know what they're talking about. I don't know how many times I can rant about it. I don't know how many times you can hear whoever talk about it, you know, Tucker Carlson or Mark Levin or me. How many times do you have to hear it before you understand your four-year-old child is not going to get it and is not going to give it? They're not.
The other thing is the mask when you're exercising is actually more dangerous to you than it is any other way. And the craziest thing that these pandemics or big things take on is when you start empowering other people to become social judges, where they're the people now, because they read a bit and piece of something or see something on TV, that they now decide that they need to enforce social policy and that they need to be the ones that tell you how to live. And if you don't, the evil eyes and the judging and the posts on social media, where they get to be judge, jury, and executioner to a group of people. And that has been empowered through all this. And that's the thing that's the most annoying thing about it, that everyone feels the right to chime in and tell other people how to live their lives based on what either a bit or piece of information that they get. And the best are, my favorite are the people, this is the people that like will come in and they're wearing all the gloves and they have the hats and they put the gloves on. And then they come into a store and they start touching everything in the store with the gloves, right? And then they go to another store and they wear their gloves and they touch other stuff that they don't buy, that they put back on the shelves, realizing that that's more harm than if they were just didn't have the gloves on, because if the gloves carry all those things with it too. But yet they think that they're the heroes of the world and saving the world when they're probably doing more harm by wearing gloves and doing It's such.
I sit and look. I'm in the city all the time. You know what's amazing, Mute, is people driving their cars alone with masks on and texting while they're driving. I'm sorry. It is maddening. I want people to read up. I want them to understand, you know, who's affecting it. Is a targeted virus that demands a targeted response. It's killing people in nursing homes, particularly in New York, New Jersey, in Massachusetts, where you have incompetent governors, in New York, if this thing does not end with Andrew Cuomo being taken away in handcuffs, being tried and convicted of manslaughter, I'll be disappointed. And I know you're never going to hear it in the Boston Globe will ignore this, and the CNN, God knows, last night, Cuomo was on again with his brother, and they were joking about how big his nose is and how big the swab is when he gets tested. This is after more than 5,000 people have died in nursing homes, and most of them
he put in there.
That he put, because he put infected patients in there. He killed people. This man, who is an icon to many people in the Democrat Party, is the most dangerous man in America. New Jersey's not far behind with Governor Murphy, another incompetent. And here in Massachusetts, we have over 80, I think almost 90 sold veterans dead in a soldier's home because of the incompetent leadership of the Charlie Baker administration. It is maddening. Maddening to watch this go on. You know why? Here's what Cuomo said yesterday. It's Trump's fault. It's Trump's fault because the guidelines said we had to put infected people in nursing homes. If that's true, why didn't they all die in Florida and in Georgia and in every other state? Why New York, New Jersey? Why? Because those governors didn't do this. I heard a number yesterday, just blew my mind. DeSantis, and I want to play DeSantis's rant. He's a big star. Coming out of this, there are some people who are emerging as big stars. And one of them's DeSantis, and another one is Kayleigh McEnany. We'll get to both of those two who are emerging from this crisis as stars. But DeSantis said yesterday that in Florida, and we all expected Florida to burn, to explode, to be the worst place, the worst hotspot of all, because they have so many elderly and they have so many people flying in and out. It's amazing how good they did, how well DeSantis did in the state of Florida. I'm looking at the numbers right now. 2,000 dead total. They have more people and many, many more elderly in Florida than in New York or New Jersey. 2,000 total. Cuomo kills that many people before breakfast. In New York, 28,758 dead. More than 5,000 people in nursing homes who could possibly be alive today.
Don't forget all the people in New York that went down to Florida once this pandemic hit, that left New York, the infected hot area, and went down to Florida too. So that's another big factor that people haven't taken into effect.
Listen to this. Listen to this fact. I think there's almost 4,000 nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and other long-term care facilities for elderly in Florida. You've been there. They're on every street corner, right?
Yeah.
They've had like just over 1,000 nursing home deaths. They don't even average one per nursing home. Not one. In Florida, in New York, they're wiping out whole wings of nursing homes. In New Jersey, same thing. DeSantis is a hero here. He locked down the nursing homes back when this thing started, just like you were supposed to do, just like we should have done in Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey. What he has done is remarkable. Yeah, I wrote it down. 4,000 nursing homes. They don't even have 4,000 total deaths. They got 2,000 in a state that is bigger.
But they're trying to disprove the numbers. That's the big narrative now, to disprove his numbers down there, to say that they're fudging the numbers down in Florida. And that's what started his rant yesterday. My question for the Baker administration and Marty Walsh and back to Frank is, are there economic people on this staff that like go through the analysis and like, okay, if we allow restaurants to open up at 40 to 60% capacity, that's worse for the restaurants than it is to just keep them shut because of the cost to run a restaurant and everything else that goes in. It's like they don't do any feasibility studies to figure out like, does this make sense for these businesses? Because to tell you the truth, none of these businesses are going to open for you.
Let me answer that for you. You asked, do they have science? Do they have, people data? The answer is no. I'm telling you right now, they operate on emotion. They operate on hunches from the mayor. Mayor Walsh, you could see it. I mean, I don't hate Mayor Walsh. He means well, but he's just an emotional liberal who sits there and says, I'm not really ready for that. And 25% in a restaurant, feels like a little bit too much. And, should we open up that, that retail store? Nah, I'm not really ready. That's the way they react. As our friend Michael Graham wrote this morning in the Boston Herald, and this I'd recommend, this is well written. Of course, it's in a better newspaper, a real newspaper. It's in the Herald, unlike Janae's piece of garbage. This is well said. He says, why do Mayor Walsh and Ayanna Pressley want businesses to fail. Why do they want people to go to be unemployed? Because that's basically what they're doing. They're saying these businesses are on the brink of bankruptcy. Screw them. Let them fail. And it's going to happen, and it's going to get worse because we have the worst leadership. If you're a, you know, if you're a capitalist, a free market guy, this is not the place for you because they have the boot on their, on your throat right now, and they're not taking it off. Yesterday, or a couple days ago, Marty Walsh said he's not ready. Not, it's too soon. All this other nonsense. Ayanna Pressley, the congressperson from this area, said, I think it's too soon. The governor's rushing. The governor's being impatient. We are last in America, in Massachusetts, last to open up most things. Last. That'd be 50th. And this congressperson said, it's too soon. They're not going to be happy. Every business is shuttered.
Well, the other things that you need to understand through all this is there's 20 some million unemployed already in the U.S., right? The problem and the people that it's hurting the most are the lower income people. Because if you look and you listen to what people are saying about the economy is that most people are expecting middle class and upper class jobs or white collar, higher white collar jobs to come back after this. But the blue collar jobs that are going to be lost, some of them are going to be lost permanently. And those are the people that need it the most. This pandemic has hurt the lower blue class worker more than anything. And they're the ones that are suffering the most. And if their inability to work, eventually the government's not going to be able to write checks for the rest of their lives. And the reason they're not going back is because they're making more, you know, sitting on the sidelines. And that's a poor precedent to set because that's something that cannot last forever. And people don't want to acknowledge that these jobs that if they continue to not go to work or have them, they're not going to exist when the ability to open up. And you can't always wait for 100% certainty for that because it's just not realistic and it's not going to happen. And it's also widening the haves and the have nots. And that's just another terrible cause and effect from all of this. And what they're doing is actually making it worse.
Well, Michael Graham writes that this morning that 40% of Americans making less than $40,000 have lost a job in March. In March, this is from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. 40% of that would be working or lower working class lost their jobs in March. Today, we're going to get numbers. It's going to be 40 million unemployed. And we have leaders who don't miss a day of work. I mean, don't miss a paycheck. Their pensions are all waiting for them. Their cushy lives, these pampered pukes are missing nothing. And they're looking at people who are working for a living, people who are, you know, waitresses or clerks at the store, the clothing store. They're looking at them and saying, screw you. Ayanna Pressley, Marty Walsh don't give a damn about them. They want to appear compassionate. They want to appear like they care about people. They care about working people when it's just the opposite. As Graham points out, Pressley and Walsh want people out of work. They want businesses to close. There can be no other explanation. As we heard from our guy, Frank Mendoza, I mean, these people are on the brink. They're on the brink of losing everything. Today's episode is brought to you by friends at Flagship Wealth. We're living in crazy economic times. You knew that. Job changes, job losses. You may have 401ks out there not being actively managed. Flagship has a free report called Managing Your Money in Retirement. Managing Your Money in Retirement is a concise overview for new retirees presented in three steps. Ready? Define your retirement needs. Emphasize the everyday expenses needed to maintain one's standard of living. Add up to what you have covers both regular sources of income and assets, such as savings and home equity, and decide what to do. Walks the reader through the planning process and suggests how to handle shortfalls. Get the free report by going to flagshipwealth.com/retirement or click the link in our show notes. That's flagshipwealth.com/retirement to learn more and get a copy of the free guide, Managing Your Money in Retirement. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC.
You guys saw the cover of the New York Post, right?
New York Post's front page today. It says end the lockdown, and it has a great rant on the page one and a great piece. by David Marcus about the whole the madness of keeping New York locked down. And I think a lot of people are going to take note of this. It's very well done. It's going to have an impact.
Let me give him a call.
It's going to have an impact, all right. It's going to raise holy hell. David Marcus has just put himself on target uno on for the rest of the national media.
Hey, you're here with Jerry Callahan, Scott Mutrin. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. Here you go, guys. You got Dave.
Hey, Dave. This is Jerry Mute here in Boston. We're looking at your front page right now in the New York Post. One man's plea. End the lockdown now. I think, and maybe this is just a Twitter thing so far, but I think this is going to have a real impact because it's kind of a wake up call. It lays out the case of the insanity of this lockdown. Did you know it was going to be on page one? Did you know you were going to get this kind of play?
Yeah, I didn't. I had written it, I'm a staff writer for The Federalist, and I wrote it originally for our outlet, but I also occasionally write for The Post. So I sent it to my editor at The Post, thinking this was probably going a little too far for them. But after a couple of days, they said they wanted to run it, and then yesterday they decided they wanted to run it on the cover. And I think the momentum is just moving so hard in this direction that it's something that I think a lot of people feel needs to be said now.
Yeah, and page, I mean, this is page one. It says the Big Apple is dying. Its streets are empty. Tens of thousands have been plunged into poverty. Our leaders have no plans, no answers. New Yorkers have already learned to socially distance. Businesses can't adjust. The elderly and infirm can continue to be isolated. That is so well said and so simple. And it applies, by the way, to Boston and everywhere else in the country that's still shut down. I mean, we're behind you in New York here in Boston. Do you find it amazing, frustrating, maddening that people can't understand such a simple plea that we're not all on the same page?
I do find it frustrating. And I think that there are obviously legitimate competing interests here. And of course, we have to keep especially the most vulnerable safe from the coronavirus. But there's not only the economic devastation, which is huge and vastly important. I'm certainly here in New York, I'm sure also in Boston, but I mean, we're at a point where people can't get cancer screenings. We're at a point where people are falling into, you know, addictions and depression. And so there's a cost of lives on the other side of this balance sheet as well. And I think that operating in this panic of nobody leave your house is just obviously not sustainable.
David, what are you going to do in your part this Memorial Day weekend as Mayor de Blasio has shut the beaches? Are you going to go to the beach and make your stand and, you know, put a towel down, get, you know, grill some burgers on the beach somewhere to try to get your movement going in the right direction?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Coney Island, so that's certainly an option. Yeah, I don't have any specific plans, but it's an interesting point because I think all over the country you are going to see Memorial Day. I certainly have colleagues who have said, you know, one colleague down in Texas and he said, we're going to the beach. So I do think that this will be a situation where you see some movement in that direction. Yeah.
Do you think will we ever see justice done as far as Andrew Cuomo goes? It is amazing today when you look at the numbers, how many dead in New York versus Florida and Texas and every Georgia. His incompetence is killing people. And yet you see the media, you see CNN and others, and I'm sure in New York Times, they still love him. They still defend him. They circle the wagons around him. Will the truth ever come out about this guy and just how much damage he's done, David?
I think that it will in the long run. I think the facts are going to be the facts. And the numbers will be the numbers, but you know, one of the things, I fell into this trap too, because I think early on, he was presenting a tone of leadership that a lot of people saw as sort of the polar opposite of President Trump's often sort of off-the-cuff remarks that got Trump into a little trouble, especially early on in all this. And I think that the media mistook his tone and him having, you know, being from a big political family and having a lot of political chops for actual competence. And I think that's something everybody needs to be careful about because we've spent 3 years so worried about, you know, the president's tone and norms and how he talks. But you know, somebody who sits up there and says exactly the right things, it doesn't mean that they're doing exactly the right things.
I think it is every time I see him with his brother and they're giggling. Last night it was about the swabs and the size of his nose. I think of the thousands of people who lost parents, grandparents, just how maddening it must be to watch these two giggle every night and watch the or listen to other people in the media just genuflect to this man who literally sent coronavirus patients into nursing homes and caused the death of thousands when in Florida and other places they said, no, we're not doing that. I don't think he's a candidate for, you know, to replace Biden anymore. I think that at least that ship has sailed. Wouldn't you agree, David?
Yes, I think that that was probably always a fantasy, but is not even a fantasy anymore. Like I said, I mean, you can't run away from the numbers, and you're exactly right. I mean, as I say in my piece, when Governor Kemp in Georgia decided to start his reopening, the Atlantic Magazine ran a headline that literally called it human sacrifice. I mean, it's crazy. Not a good scene for the governor right now, and I do think that tide is turning a little bit. We'll see if it does on public opinion, but certainly the facts don't look good.
Have you got a feeling that the leadership there has lost like their constituents and the people, or are all these people still thinking that they're doing the greater good, or are the majority of people think that what they're doing is helping the situation? Or at this point, are they starting to question what's really going on? Are they afraid to ask questions, or are they actually willing to go out there and start to do something about it?
I mean, it's hard to know because we're all pretty much trapped in our houses. So we can only, you know, really judge that off of people in our social networks and stuff like that. You know, you're not seeing mass protests in New York City, but there's definitely people are starting to move around again. I live very close to the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, and every day, you know, that's sort of famous for just being gridlock all the time. And it's pretty close to being back to that. The streets here in Brooklyn are much more full. I mean, there is just a sense that people have gone about as much of this as they can.
I think that's what's going to happen, David, in Boston as well as New York, is the shutdown's going to end when people decide it's going to end, when they open restaurants, when they open stores en masse, and there's only so much that, you know, de Blasio's stormtroopers can do. If they, you know, he says they're going to yank people out of the water and when they go in the ocean. And what if, you know, thousands of people go in the water? What can he do?
No, it's crazy. And the whole thing of, like, you know, we're supposed to be spying on our neighbors now and calling 311 if we see somebody. I mean, this is Brooklyn. Like, we're not doing that. That's crazy talk.
Yeah, I mean, it's reached that point. Hopefully, you know, the pendulum has swung and more people are looking at it the way you and I am, David. But excellent piece today. I'm glad they put it on page one. I'm glad it's gone viral. I think it's going to have a real impact. I know you didn't expect it, but I think this piece you wrote is going to resonate. Excellent job, David Marcus from The Federalist. Thanks for joining us.
Really appreciate it.
You know what's going to happen, Mute? I don't know if it's going to happen here in New York, but there's going to be like 1,000 restaurant owners are going to band together. I mean, Frank Mendoza said it. They're going to say, let's just do it. Let's open up. Lots of the cops don't want to enforce this stuff. You see them. Some of the cops are literally announcing that they're not going to enforce some of these strict guidelines. They're not going to bust people for not wearing masks outdoors or for not keeping 6 feet away from their spouses. I mean, cops know these are unreasonable orders. They're not laws, they're orders, and they're not going to enforce them. And then the whole thing's just going to fall apart. I don't know what Marty's going to do when you go back to your office and it's more than 25% capacity. What is Marty going to do?
Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting. Some people can stay 6 feet away from their spouses quite easily. It's not that hard. I can't wait for Trump to retweet this and praise the David's article today. It's only a matter of time before that gets major.
Absolutely, maybe he already has.
He's going to be the Frank Mendoza of today for the administration and saying what everyone has been trying to say the entire time. I think it's funny when you listen to these people that actually open up and want to get people out back to work. I love the narrative, the two narratives of, if you want to go back to work, you're immediately a murderer, which to me is an amazing step from one to Z, A to Z. And then the other part that I love is the people that want to just stay locked up forever.
I think a big part of it, Butte, is they want to hurt Trump. They want the lockdown to last, because the longer it lasts, the better chance that, sleepy, creepy Joe Biden has. I think someone like Ayanna Pressley, that's her motivation. I mean, she doesn't care that so many, half the working class people in her district are unemployed. She doesn't care that small business people are going under. She doesn't care. We know that now. Ayanna Pressley, Marty Walsh do not give a damn about working people. That's all a ruse. But they do care about Joe Biden. They do care that that they can hang this whole thing, this economy, this unemployment rate around Trump. That's their top priority. The biggest fear they have is that we end the lockdown and as Trump keeps saying, this economy is going to go off like a rocket. I mean, I don't think it is. I'll defer to you on this, but that's their biggest fear, that when we end the lockdown, when we reopen, things go great. That's what Marty's afraid of.
Well, yeah. That the other thing is, this is the one that baffles me the most, is that, in David's article, he talks about Georgia and Florida and how when they went back out, people are genuinely cheering for viruses to go up. Correct. And people go up and deaths to go up, when their whole argument for not going up, for not going to work, is to save lives and that people don't die. So they're actually cheering for people to die to prove their point, which is, to me, is the most ass backwards logic of all time. How can you legitimately cheer for people to be unsuccessful and so quote unquote die because they want to prove your point? That is the most idiotic, self-centered view that you can absolutely have. And if you say that you're just hoping and waiting for it to happen, you really need to check yourself into an institution, because you have some serious issues if you're cheering for people to die so that your narrative is proven to be correct.
It's very simple, Mute. Orange man bad. They want to, they want the orange man to fail. And right now they have hope. They have hope that they can bring him down in November, even though their candidate is incompetent. They think that if this can last a little longer into the summer, maybe we can get a spike. If you're Ayanna Pressley, that's your top priority. Stop the evil orange man. But here's what I like is when people, fight back. Obviously, Trump fights back to a fault. Sometimes it's crazy when he attacks whatever people on Twitter he gets distracted and he starts talking about, the hoax, the Russian hoax, and he just goes down a rabbit hole.
He chooses hills to die on. He really does. He fights things like when some of the things that he says about whether it's the investigating Obama and doing all the other stuff, but then you expect him to take the bait when Pelosi calls him morbidly obese and he kind of just dismisses that. He chooses to die on. I mean, it's just some of them, they're maddening to listen to, because you're just like, oh my God, you're a 12-year-old child. Just let it go.
He's going to get back to Pelosi, Mute. Don't you wait. Don't you worry. He didn't say much the first time he was asked about it. He will. He's going to get back to Pelosi.
Also, 2.4 million more jobs lost again this week.
That's almost 40 million since the pandemic began. Again, Ayanna Pressley, Charlie Baker, all our liberals in power around here, Cuomo, they don't care. De Blasio, do not care. 40 million unemployed doesn't bother them a bit. They're okay with it.
I don't understand why also the goalposts constantly get moved in this situation. Because when this originally started 8 weeks plus ago, it was, don't overwhelm the hospitals and take care of the elderly the most at-risk group, right? And then once that had kind of been curtailed and you see the amount of people that are hospitalized, they changed it. And now it became, kids aren't going to go back to school until there's a vaccine or until this is gone. So I don't understand how that came about. And I don't understand why it constantly keeps getting moved, because they keep changing it, and they're never, and although they've gone in this phase things where you're saying the plan, there's no real it hasn't been articulated like what their idea behind it is. They initiated the phases that this is what you can do and these are the places you can go. But there's no reasoning behind it. They don't choose to tell us their thought process as to, okay, we want to get back to where we were. This is how we're going to do it. The phases don't really explain that. So
it's all smoke and mirrors.
They're making it up as they go along, which is not really. If you're doing that, then you can't all of a sudden expect people to just be locked in their houses and just say, okay, because you say so. Because you say so, you don't have any plan, you have any idea, but just because you say so, that's why you're starting to see more traffic, because people are just starting to just be like, all right, enough's enough. You're not telling
me anything. They're figuring out, and we talked about this with Frank Mendoza, and with other business owners, with hair cutters and gym owners this week. We've done a lot of this, and people are now realizing that the decision makers don't know what they're doing. That Charlie Baker and your pal Turtle Boy had a great piece. I tweeted it out. I hope people read it yesterday. Turtle Boy, not only is he the best journalist in New England, he might be the only one, because as I said, this is the kind of thing the Boston Globe would do if Baker were Republican, but he exposes Baker for the fraud that he is. Turtle Boy does simple. One guy sits down at his computer and writes about this company. Baker had a press conference at this company called Simmons that makes, you know, expensive, luxurious bathroom fixtures or something, but they adjusted and made some stupid thing that's supposed to help you open a door without touching it. And he went out there and he did a press conference and, you know, usual nonsense, talking about how we all have to, whatever, social distance and wash our hands. It was a photo op for his pal who owns the company who donates to him. And Turtle Boy digs a little bit, finds out that the guy laid off over 100 people, just laid them off, and the thing he's making is useless. So the whole thing was just a clown show, another one. Baker does one of these, you know, almost every day. And if you haven't read Turtle Boy, you gotta, because it just shows you that these people, he's not on the level. Charlie Baker is not on the level. You know, he is taking lots of money from nursing homes, even though, you know, he's mismanaging them. And he's taking care of buddies, donors, pals like the guy running this company, Simmons, yesterday. And the whole thing is a joke. Again, Marty Walsh says, you work in Boston, right? You're in an office in Boston. Yeah. Baker says he wants offices to go back at 25% capacity. How many people work in your office?
Oh, I mean, there's thousands of people that work in our office. And we're also in the middle of a construction project for our office. So they're combining offices. That got delayed as well. The thing I love about Turtle Boy's article and what he does is that he's very good at this. And usually a good reporter should do this, is you follow the money. Right. The money's going to lead you to a lot of the answers that where you get to. And he did a great job of that in that article, because I'm sure there's money given to, you know, Governor Baker's campaign right there to get a nice little photo op and to do that. And when you find out all the dirt behind it, that's the best part, because that's when you find out. And you can even look at the phases and look at the reasons to why the things get opened up. You got to see who's given the most money to the parties. And you hate to say it, but it's, you want to believe in the institution and your government, but let's be honest, it's what gets you reelected is what you're going to take care of the most, because that's whoever's helping you out is going to get it. And it's been that way.
I'm hoping people are like Frank Mendoza. He used to support Walsh and Baker, and now his eyes are open. He's realizing they don't care about him. I'm hoping people realize, like Marty Walsh, when he says, you know, we're not ready. We're not ready. Ready for what? Nothing in, if you open today, say your office opens today, nothing that's going to happen today isn't going to happen in 2 or 3 weeks. Nothing's changing. The virus, there's no vaccine. The virus is still going to be an issue you have to deal with in 3 weeks or 5 weeks or 8 weeks. There's no reason, but I'm repeating myself. I want to get to DeSantis because I love this rant. I want more of these rants, because these are the people who have been slandered and libeled. The governor Kemp in Georgia, Governor Abbott in Texas, and especially Ron DeSantis in Florida. And he was told, oh, you're going to kill people. The nursing homes are going to get wiped out. You don't know what you're doing. The beaches, people are on the beach. They're all going to die. He heard this stuff for weeks. And now, 8 weeks down the road, he is an example of how a governor should do his job and protect his people. And DeSantis went off in really in Trump style. He kind of he did a Trump, pointing at the media and then just letting them have it. And I loved it.
Transparent. In fact, Dr. Birx has talked multiple times about how Florida has the absolute best data. So any insinuation otherwise is just typical partisan narrative trying to be spun. And part of the reason is that because you got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks. Florida's going to be next. Just like Italy. Wait 2 weeks. Well, hell, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened. Not only do we have a lower death rate, well, we have way lower deaths generally. We have a lower death rate than the Acela Corridor, D.C., everyone up there. We have a lower death rate than the Midwest, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. But even in our region, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida has the lower death rate. And I was the number one landing spot from tens of thousands of people leaving the number one hot zone in the world to come to my state. So we've succeeded. And I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative. It challenges their assumption. So they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
Last question. That last shot was nice too.
He was standing right next to the vice president when he did it, but he's so right. It was all these predictions of gloom and doom. And David Marcus said, when Georgia opened up ahead of everybody, the Atlantic magazine said, this is an experiment in human sacrifice. There was predictions of just waves and spikes and all the cliches. Everyone was going to die. The mayor of Atlanta, who was against opening up, she's a liberal, of course, and she was against Kemp opening up. She said she was wrong. She admitted it didn't happen. It didn't happen. All these media people, all of them, all the networks, all the CNNs, MSNBCs, all of them were wrong about Florida. They were wrong about Georgia. And they were wrong about, you know, Andrew Cuomo and Charlie Baker. These guys are incompetent. And we're seeing it now. Again, Florida is bigger than New York. 2,000 deaths total. New York, 28,758. And at least 5,000 of those are on Cuomo's hands. But
kudos to the mayor of Atlanta for admitting her mistake, right? At least you don't see many politicians stand on the soapbox and admit that they made a mistake. They usually try to pawn it off on someone or they received bad data from somebody else. But kudos to that. This goes back to the whole thing. It's like when you write that article, to write an article where you're endorsing your view that you want to see other people die so it proves your point, you're sicko. You're sicko. What kind of person wants
Trump
to do that?
They are sick. They are sick. They have Trump derangement syndrome. That's what Trump does to these people. They want death and destruction as long as it gets on Trump, as long as they can blame. I mean, Cuomo actually blamed Trump yesterday, which is comical. I mean, he can't take blame for anything. He's the worst. I'm going to be
hysterical about Donald Trump is his ability to piss people off so much that they're willing to do whatever it takes to just try to get their pound of flesh from him. And the constant tries that these people try to do to go after and attack him that blow up in their face. It's like, it's absolutely hilarious. It's like, he just sits back there and goes, all right, who am I going to fuck with today? Like, who am I really going to piss off today? And then he does it. And it just sends people into a whirlwind. They get so rattled that they just spend so much time trying to prove him wrong and disprove all his stuff that they totally get off the point of what they were trying to do in the beginning. It's actually an impressive talent to be able to rattle people's cages as much as he does.
It is amazing. And he's got the perfect spokeswoman. We'll get to her. Kayleigh McEnany, the new idol out there. I'm telling you, DeSantis has been good. He's emerged from this as kind of a star and maybe a potential, presidential candidate down the road. Instantly, Kayleigh McEnany is a darling of the right, including this right-wing zealot, because I am enjoying the hell. She's better than Trump with the media. She's better than Trump. She's been great. But we'll get to Kayleigh McEnany after I talk about Shea Concrete. We got a lot of other things to get to with the mute man. Shea Concrete, this is for you homeowners and home builders. Did you know that my brother-in-law, Greg, has a huge selection of precast concrete steps? Of course you did. I've been telling you about this. This is the perfect spring project. This is the way to improve your home, improve the value of your home. And if you're building a home, to build a better home. Shea has great values designs for any of the homes available in concrete or customized with beautiful stone, granite, or brick. You can't do a lot of things these days, but you can do this. You can upgrade your front steps with Shea. Give them a call. A new staircase can dramatically upgrade the front entrance for your home and make those pictures better. All those graduation pictures, prom pictures, you get new front steps. You'll see them there. You'll say, what a good move that was. What an improvement. In most cases, the guys at Shea can remove your old stairs and have you walking up your new front steps within hours. Call them or log on to SheaConcrete.com and learn more. Learn everything there is to know about Shea's precast concrete steps. SheaConcrete.com. I looked this up, and it's the good news and bad news. You know, good news is Kaylee McEnany is 32 years old. She's going to be around forever, fighting the good fight. Bad news is she's married. She's married to a minor league baseball player.
Really? I didn't know she's married.
Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, his name is, I think, Gil Martin or something. Gil Martin.
By the way, I don't think she'll be around for that. I mean, she'll be around politically for a long time, but the job doesn't exactly seem to be the most secure job in politics.
Yeah.
No. You know what happens after
one bad press conference? Anthony Scaramucci can tell you that. It only takes one bad one to get you booted on that one. I mean, she's great. The best part is it's like she's very well prepared when she goes into these meetings, and she's prepared and she's unemotional. She doesn't get riled. She just when you ask the question back to the reporters, back to that is the biggest, you know, tail smack, like ass smack that you can get. And she just loves
you. Like, she's prepared for every question. She doesn't seem to even want the friendly questions. You know, she wants the hostile ones. She wants to put them in their place. And she doesn't get emotional. Unlike Trump, she doesn't. That's a nasty question. She says, I'm glad you asked me that. I want to talk about this. And she's got notes and research. She is ready to go every day. I'm not saying she's going to be the spokesman for 40 years, Dave. I'm saying she's going to be around. She'll be on TV. She'll be writing books. She'll be speaking. She'll be the next whatever, Ann Coulter, writing columns and burning places down. But yesterday, I tweeted this one out. I don't know if you have it, but she put Chris Cuomo, that punk, in his place, because Chris Cuomo was literally blasting Trump for taking hydroxychloroquine. This was a weird one when Trump announced that he was taking the drug hydroxychloroquine, and the media went nuts, including Neil Cavuto saying that, you know, you could die. This is irresponsible. What the hell are they talking about? He was prescribed a drug. It's a preventative drug, a prophylactic. And they went nuts. Like, why are you doing this? What do they care? I mean, what they want him to get sick. They want him to go away. Why do they care if he takes a dangerous drug? And do we really think he did it without a prescription, without consulting his doctor? I thought your doctor-patient relationship was sacrosanct. I thought we weren't allowed to get in the middle of a patient and his or her doctor.
Yeah, that too. But hydrochloroquine has been around for forever, and it's FDA approved. It's FDA approved. This is not like some rogue drug. He's not just buying smack in the street and shooting it in his veins. You know, this is an FDA approved drug that his doctor approved of. It's not experimental in any way, shape, or form.
It was weird. Anyway, she just kills Chris Cuomo because guess what? Chris Cuomo took the same drug. In fact, he took a more dangerous version of the same drug when he was pretending to have.
Don't you say that. He was not pretending. That was real. He was in his basement. He was fighting the struggle, Jerry. How dare you question that, you son of a bitch.
It's true. He didn't have it because I know he had it because he gave it to everybody else in his family because he didn't actually quarantine.
Yeah, see, over Boston, he's popping on the new meatball.
You had Jimmy Kimmel saying the president's, quote, trying to kill himself by taking it. You had Joe Scarborough saying, quote, this will kill you. Neil Cavuto saying, what have you got to lose? One thing you have to lose are lives. And you had Chris Cuomo saying the president knows that hydroxychloroquine is not supported by science. He knows it has been flagged by his own people, and he's using it. Cuomo mocked the president for this. And interestingly, I found this out just before coming here. Hydroxychloroquine, of course, is an FDA-approved medication with a long proven track record for safety. And it turns out that Chris Cuomo took a less safe version of it called quinine, which the FDA removed from the market in 2006 because of its serious side effects, including death. So really interesting to have that criticism of the president. And on that note to Chris Cuomo, I'd like to redirect him to his brother, the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, who has several on the record statements about hydroxychloroquine, saying, "I'm an optimist. I'm hopeful about the drug, and that's why we'll try it here in New York as soon as we get it. There has been anecdotal evidence that it's promising. That's why we're going ahead." And I have about eight other quotes from Governor Cuomo, should any of you have interest in that.
And there's the mic drop. There's the mic drop. Now, if you, the quinine, if you change a couple letters there, it can be Quaaludes, and then it gets really interesting into that. And that would, I mean, those, they stopped making those a long time ago. But if he was taking Quaaludes, that could explain a lot. It really could.
She, you know what she is? She's what I wish Trump were, like more focused and more articulate when she has her battles. When she goes on the attack, it's well-researched and backed up and she focuses on one person or one thing and just knocks it out of the park, where Trump gets distracted and, you know, says dumb stuff like "you're a horrible person" or "you're a terrible, nasty person."
And okay. I'm glad you said that. So I want to ask you this. So I was saying that same thing, and I was having this debate with my wife about why Trump does that. I mean, sometimes we wish he would hold his tongue, but don't you think that some of the reason that he does fire back and what makes it so appealing to, because he fires up the base when he does that, because he's saying what bunch of other people that support him would say if they were in that position. Do you think sometimes he does it for the theater? I honestly think that he does it as the theater to rile people up.
Well, one thing, Mute, and I'm a good example of this. People on the right have wanted a fighter. We've had a bunch of pussycats, you know, Mitt Romney and George Bush, and we just haven't really had a fighter to battle. I mean, the Democrats have been much more vicious and personal and hostile than the Republicans. It's just that they're afraid of the media. They're afraid of the backlash. Trump doesn't care. Trump says, "My people want me to fight. I'm going to fight." I just sometimes think he goes off the rails, and I want him to focus, and I want him to keep fighting, no question. And he will, and I will enjoy it. But she just seems more focused. That's all. And I'm glad. I hope she stays there for the rest of the next 5 years or 5.5 years of this Trump regime. Probably not, because you burn out quick in that job. But so far, so good. She's tough, man. She is smart and she is tough.
It's fun to watch someone as well prepared, and like when you're able to take the emotions out of it and take that out of your tone and be able to address people that way and throw their facts back in their face, it's actually more disarming than it is by riling them up. Because when you rile them up, they're always looking to find the next one, and they take that emotions and take it to another level. But when you do it with that precision and with that just like cold-bloodedness, like you really disarm people that way. And I think she just does a great job, because she just presents the facts and lets them come up with their response to it. When you ask someone a question and give them the facts right back that disputes what they're saying, it's really tough to continue that fight. So now you move to the next topic, and it allows her and probably the regime to get on their topics that they want to talk about and what they want to address by disarming them that much.
Speaking of cold-blooded, I want to get to some sports, because we have Mute here, a couple of sports topics. And one, we have a real sporting event Sunday. I'm going to watch. It might be the first sporting event I've watched. I haven't watched any soccer or NASCAR yet. I don't know about you. I'm not interested. I have less interest in soccer than I do in wrestling. So I haven't watched any wrestling either, Dave. I haven't watched any MMA.
No, but you watched
the hate up there. Soccer is another hate, Dave.
Yeah, you watched the golf thing over the weekend, didn't you? You watched some of that.
I did not. I watched about 2 minutes of it. Lane, I watched some highlights. I wasn't really into it. I mean, it was cool. They wore shorts and carried their own bags. But I'm going to watch golf this Sunday, and I'll tell you why. One reason above, it's Mickelson and Brady versus Tiger and Peyton Manning. It's a great idea. It's supposed to raise a fortune for charity. I'm glad that they're doing it. It's going to be interesting. Here's the most interesting part of it all is Tom Brady going to embarrass himself? Because let's be honest, it's one thing to, you know, win Super Bowls and be the greatest clutch quarterback or the greatest player ever. It's another thing to, you know, hit a 4-foot putt when the whole world is watching and there's $1 million on the line. I think he'll be fine, but I give him credit for this. He's taking a chance. He really is taking a chance because his reputation is that he's a great clutch performer, right? Maybe the greatest ever. Just a great guy under pressure. You've played football at a high level, and you've played a lot of golf. You would agree there are two different things, right? Making a play to win a Super Bowl and hitting a four-footer with Tiger Woods on the other team and staring you down.
I would say the putt is 10 times harder than any of that other – than any playing in that event. When you're in the moment and you're playing within the flow of a game, you don't get caught up in that. But as you're sitting over a putt worth $1 million or however much it's worth, the hands get a little shakier, and it definitely gets you a lot more nervous. At least for me now, I sit over these putts and I've missed my share of them, but it's definitely a harder thing to do than playing in front of a stadium in the flow of the game where you don't take in all those other emotions.
I know Brady's a good golfer. He's like a 10 handicap. We've seen his swing. He's got
like better than that. I think he's like a six. Six or a four.
We've talked about it on the radio. We've talked about golf many times with him. He loves golf. He played as a kid with his father and all that. But he's still in the NFL. He's a little busy, even though there's a lockdown. We saw him practicing. We've seen him get out and throw the football around. Peyton Manning's probably playing golf every day, probably practicing every day. We know Tiger and Phil are Tiger and Phil. There's only one guy out there that probably feels like he's just not prepared for this, but he's doing it anyway. Again, I give him credit. He is taking a chance. And you know what happens if he misses that four-footer to lose $1 million? Everyone in America outside of, Route 495 and Tampa Bay now, everyone in the rest of America cheers like they have not cheered since, we had sports,
You know that there's not a green jacket awaiting anyone after this event, right? It's for charity.
But you know what there is, Dave? There's probably 15 million people watching. You've seen some of the ratings for these things for the NFL draft.
Yep.
You know, the NASCAR race, they had 8 million people watching. I'm going to guess the audience peaks at, 12, 14 million people. Almost all of them are rooting for Brady to miss that four-footer to lose the match.
The people in New England are going to say if he was still here, he would have made that. But now that he's in Tampa, he's soft and he missed it. That's the one narrative. I can't wait to see that. I want to know the side bet, because if you know Phil Mickelson, he's not just playing the charity match that's on TV. These guys are playing for some money, and there's some definite stakes going on in this, as there was this past Sunday. It's Seminole, great golf course, by the way. They were known to be playing. They were playing for a side match on top of it for money. You heard Dustin Johnson kind of refer to it a bunch of times. So that to me is the interesting part when they start playing for their own money and you're wondering how much is on the line going on.
Honestly, I'm not sure if I were Brady, I would do this because I would feel like I'm not ready where everyone else is ready. And I'd feel like overmatched and I'd feel like I don't want to embarrass myself, but he's Brady. He's got confidence. I give him credit. This takes a level of balls. It really does to go out there and potentially embarrass yourself, which is something he never does in his sport. Never.
I think that could happen. I think Brady knows going into this, and especially after last weekend's, bore fest that I watched, and I was looking forward to that. This is for entertainment. They're going to be mic'd up. It's more about the jokes and the ball busting than it will ever be about the putts.
You know what's going to happen is they're going to evolve from that to, here it is. We're coming down the 18th hole. Now they're getting serious. They'll make it seem like it matters at some point, maybe not on the front nine, but at some point they're going to make it seem like it matters because you need that element of pressure. That's what we're all watching for. It's one thing to see these guys screwing around and having some laughs, but isn't everyone tuning in hoping that the pressure's on when the match is on the line?
Yeah, but it's they're going to forget about it within 24 hours. It's going to be it's a joke little event. No. We all put pressure on ourselves when we're playing golf.
If Brady doesn't drop a line when Manning's lining up over a putt and goes, "Oh, I think Ty Law's running past the hole. Don't throw it to him on this one like you did three times in the AFC Championship game." Like if he doesn't drop any of those, then you're just missing prime, you know, getting his head material. Because there's so much. He owns Peyton Manning in a lot of those things. You know, there's got to be some good back and forth. And Mickelson's not afraid to talk shit either. He's pretty good at it.
I know. Well, how about this? How about this one, guys? Say it's the 18th hole, and I don't know, the Mickelson is counting on Brady, and he's got like 120-yard pitching wedge, and he chunks it, and it goes like 12 yards. That would be – the whole country would be laughing and loving it, and Brady would be hanging his head. That would be – you know, that one moment that everyone's been waiting for on the football field for 20 years that never seems to come, that one real gaffe, it could happen on Sunday. I don't think it will. I hope it doesn't. I hope Brady does well. And it's Brady.
And you know what, though? It would endear Tom Brady to more American people than he already does, because he's so perfect at everything else. To see him chunk a shot would actually get – he would actually be embraced by more Americans, because he goes, at least he can suck at something like the rest of us do. You want to? I have a little funny side story on top of that. So the course that they played at Seminole the past weekend, there's a funny Tiger Woods story. I was playing there, and on the 18th hole, Tiger had never played there, and he was asking the guy that he was playing with, "Where should I be aiming?" And in the background, there's a gigantic crane, and the caddy or the guy that he was playing against said, "Hit it towards that big crane that you're paying for in your divorce settlement." So that was kind of some nice shit talk that can go on out there. Tiger apparently gave him a hell of a glance and didn't hit the shot as he wanted to. So he got it sufficiently in his head.
It's going to be another sport.
That's the stuff you want to hear about. You want to hear that talk. Well,
you know how it works, Dave? Do you know, is it 18 holes, all of it on TV?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So it's a so
4 hours?
Yeah, it's going to be a long event. So the front nine is it's best ball is where you actually play your own. You play your own ball the whole time, right? So that's best ball. And then the back nine is scramble, where you pick the best shot of the two. Yeah. So that's
the pressure's off when they're playing scramble. The pressure's off of Brady and Manning, but when they're playing best ball, and you know, I assume Tiger's like a +8 handicap. I mean, +8 handicap. So is Mickelson, obviously. So Brady must be getting, you know, whatever. Like, what would that be?
He'll be 14 getting a shot a hole. Yeah, he'll be getting shot. Well, they're just playing the front nine that way. Him and Peyton will probably stroke each hole, at least one, maybe
he'll get
two.
He'll get three handicap strokes on the first nine each. Brady and Manning.
Oh, not that many. I once played with the long drive, the Pinnacle long drive team out at the International, and there was like six of them. And Dino and I played with. We each had a group, and it was embarrassing because it would take me like three shots to get to their drive. Their drives were 450 yards. You know, they loved the course because it was so long. And we'd be like, "Hold on, can I just jump out and hit again?" While they're like driving to their ball. That's what it's going to be like. Game? Manning and Brady are good. They're going to be playing a scramble. Their tee shots are going to go, you know, 240, where Tigers are going to go, and Mickelson's are going to go 320.
Yep.
Why would they ever play
I don't know.
Brady's ball?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't care. I'm grateful to Tom Brady that my immunity's better now. I'm buying his special immunity potion.
How come nobody backed Brady at all? Like every column is just bashing Brady for this. He did not create this product specifically for the pandemic. I don't know why.
Then it's bad timing. He should have saved it. The idea that you're selling something to boost your immunities in the middle of this trying time, he doesn't need that. Why is he doing it? It just seems
like... Well, you can't wait forever. If we're going to be in the middle of this, we're already +8 weeks in. If you got to wait till September when school starts, it's going to be another 6 months. Why should he have to hold this product just because people were in the middle of a pandemic? If it boosts your immunity, then sell it. Who gives
a shit? He's running a business. You got to promote the make product money. Sell. You know, like nobody would even notice. This is the dumb part, right? Like he could have had some underling do the exact same thing and to sell the product on the TB12 Instagram page, and nobody notices. It's just that Tom Brady's the guy who says it, and everyone wants to throw a hissy fit about it. It's stupid. Nobody pays attention.
You shouldn't do that in the middle of a pandemic. You don't need it. Save it. You don't need it. How much are you actually selling? And you know, do you really think it boosts your immunity? I think it's all nonsense. But anyway. You guys are out of luck. I'm out of luck. Well, actually, no, you're not out of luck. Bob Kraft Super Bowl ring, that raffle to that auction of for that charity, an all-in charity, which is raising a fortune. It ends tonight. So you still got time, Mute. The bidding for the ring, one freaking ring from one Super Bowl. Kraft's got five others. And I think you get to have dinner with Kraft.
Wait, doesn't now, Putin have one? I thought Putin stole one from him. So he could be down one, right?
One ring, $1.025 million. It's over $1 million.
It's wild.
So I guess not everybody's hurting during this pandemic and this Great Depression. Tonight it ends. It'll end at probably at that number. $1 million a guy's paying for one ring, which is mind-boggling.
Look at all the Globe subscriptions he could buy with that.
Why would you want to do that?
A shit ton. I read an article yesterday. It was in Digiday, and it was talking about how the Boston Globe is down 30% in advertising, but it's okay because they're up 30% in digital subscriptions. And I don't know if you've seen how much a digital subscription costs right now. It costs 99 cents. I think it's for 6 months, but maybe a year.
Overpriced. I won't do it. I'm sorry. 99 cents, and it's. I would rather spend my money on one share of Entercom stock. They're both pretty much worthless. But before we go, we got to do this, Dave, because you've been busy on Facebook Live. I gave Turtle Boy a lot of credit for his story about Charlie Baker stooge who owns this company that makes bathroom fixtures, and they did this photo op yesterday. And lots of people on the Facebook Live comments section are killing Turtle Boy because he made a couple mistakes, and you're looking into this. I want to give Mute the chance to take a shot at Turtle Boy before we sign off here.
He loves to, and his minions love to come at me. I got no beef with Turtle Boy. I like the fact that he does and researches this and goes after it. I mean, he thinks I'm bored or whatever. I don't really care. I don't get into that. I don't like to talk ill will of people. I'm just not that way. So he had a mistake. Right? We all make mistakes. We're all human. He's fighting the good fight. He's doing what he thinks is right. I don't choose to go about my business the way he does, but I'm not going to tell him give him crap for it. I don't care.
What did you say when the old lady told you you were walking the wrong way at Ace Hardware? Did you snap at her?
I said, ease down, Fauci. Just because it's just like, there's no need to shake your head at me when I'm walking. I'm carrying a grill brush, and I had to hurry because I had a tea time that I was trying to get to. So I'm sorry that I wasn't going to walk halfway around the store. I was going to walk halfway around the goddamn store just so I could get in there.
So she told you you're walking the wrong way, like they had little lines on the ground on the floor?
Yeah, there were lines that I didn't follow because I would have had to literally circle all the way back around. The line was already eight people deep. I had this great pink mask that I have to wear it because some stores don't let you in. I don't wear it otherwise. If I'm not forced to, I don't wear one. So I wear this beautiful pink. It's a like Nantucket vodka mask, and it's pretty sweet. It's got a big whale. So I'm wearing this big pink mask and I walking right through and there was lines and I walked, the wrong way to get to the cash register. And I happened to pass her in line and she was full decked out. She looked like she was ready to, gloves, sunglasses, mask, hat, all of it. And I probably got within 3 feet and she looked at me, shook her head. Then as I stood my place, two places in line behind her, she kept looking back at me and shaking her head and just doing those like, heaven forbid I walked the wrong way. Oh my God. I can't believe I did it. I walked out of there and I was really disappointed in myself. But after the second time I had enough. So I just go enough, Fauci. And the guy ahead of me in line did the shoulder shuffle because he kind of thought it was kind of funny, but it was, I just don't do that. Just don't be that person. Don't be that asshole. You're not the law. You don't get to tell me what to do. Get over yourself. Go buy your hoe and your shovel and your potted plant.
You call it a hoe? Shut
the fuck up and leave me alone.
I think we're going to look back in shame at this time when we're asking public officials, elected officials are asking people to rat out their neighbors. This is going to be
stupid.
An embarrassing, point in time in this country, and I hope people who do it are embarrassed. I mean, think of this. You got a mask on. All you're doing is walking the wrong direction. You're not threatening her at all, putting her in danger. There's no chance you're infecting her.
I didn't cough. She didn't cough. Didn't sneeze. What are you trying to accomplish by that, though? Like, if you're that person, what are you hoping to accomplish? Do you want me to come up to you and say, I am so sorry, I walked the wrong way, I beg for your forgiveness? Like, what are you trying to accomplish by that? When you go onto social media and you rat people out for a kid's, you know, riding bikes or whatever, like, what are you hoping to accomplish? Do you shame parents to get them to not do it? Newsflash. People are going to do what they want to do, not because of what you choose to post or say about people. So get over yourself. Yeah. You're not a cop. You don't get to enforce the laws. You're just another person like the rest of us. Go live your life and stop trying to tell other people how to live theirs.
Listen to this guy, Cullinane. He's afraid of Turtle Boy, but he'll go at the old lady in the hardware store.
I'm not afraid of him. I just don't engage in that. There's nothing for me to gain from engaging in that. There's nothing. What do I gain from that? Nothing.
I'm just starting to shake the comments. Turtle Boy's article is 100% accurate because I had people reach out to me with the same story. I think a lot of the disgruntled employees there. And by the way, if you're going to reach out to me, if you listen to this show every day and you want to give a tip, LinkedIn is not the way to go about it. Okay. Find me on Twitter. I respond to everybody all day, every day. I miss that LinkedIn, but I'm glad they reached out to Turtle Boy because it was great.
Just tape it to a bottle of Pink Whitney and send it to him. That's the best way to get Dave's attention. It's not that hard, people.
That's a good way.
I said it on Twitter. I'll say it again. It's an excellent piece. If you want to see how much of a fraud Charlie Baker and Karen Polito, they are, read Turtle Boy's post from yesterday about their photo op with their buddy. Where was that? Braintree or Weymouth?
Yeah, Braintree.
It's revealing and it's excellent. And it's the kind of work you used to read in newspapers but not anymore. You got to turn to Turtle Boy for that. But anyway, I know you have a tea time.
That's right. That is very true. But don't forget the local company, Moderna, is the one that's made the biggest progress on a vaccine for coronavirus. So they live in Cullinane's backyard. I think you should send him on a fact-finding mission to see what's going on there. Since he's close to Norwood anyways, he should really go out and see what's happening on the vaccine stage there to save the rest of us so we can all leave our houses again.
Save the world.
Yeah.
I'll head over there. That's my job for today.
Why don't you be test patient one? They can shoot you with it and see what happens. And then you just walk the streets and see if you get the coronavirus or not. I'll volunteer you for that. I think you can do it.
Mute. He hasn't left his basement in 8 weeks. He's afraid.
Jerry is taking all sorts of shit on Twitter about us not doing the show on the Legacy Club. Nobody knows that is a.
I was going to drive to the Legacy Club. And Jerry, I'm surprised you didn't say that. Cullinane's skin color matches the color of his shirt. I don't know where his shirt starts and where his body starts because he's so pasty white. He's got to get some sun on him, for Christ's sake.
I'm trying. Yeah.
This weekend, you got to get some sun. God knows. Look at Mute. He looks like, one of these guys plays golf every day, plays more golf than Peyton Manning these days. He's got four little kids. I guess you don't really have a job anymore, so that's good. You get your handicap down. All that's right. The important thing in this pandemic.
My game's got worse. It's tough. You know what though, Jerry? 7.5 mile walk, and I got to carry the bag, and you obviously need to be properly hydrated throughout the round. So that's a lot of work. I hope those guys don't have Peyton and Tom don't have to cover carry their own bags like the guys did last week.
Tiger's not going to carry his own bag. That's true. He's got back.
I got to carry my own bag. So that's a big workout too. And the Peloton every day. You got to be able to get on there and get your exercise in. But that's the way to do it.
All right, Mute Man. Thanks. We will talk to you again next week. Thanks to David Marcus from The Federalist. If you didn't hear it, he's got a page one story in the New York Post, a good rant about ending the lockdown. I think it's going to have an impact. I think you should read it. It's well done. Hopefully, elected officials will read it like Ayanna Pressley and Marty Walsh, and they'll wake up. Time to end the lockdown everywhere. This has gone long enough. Thanks to Shea Concrete and Allied Paving and our friends at DCU. Thanks, Cullinane.
If you're still listening to the end of the podcast, one, we appreciate you if you made it this long, but two, make sure you subscribe if you haven't, because if you haven't, you're a dummy and you will not be alerted to the fact that there will be a Friday episode tomorrow. All right. So do not be a dummy. Subscribe to the
special
podcast.
Friday episode.
Yes.
I'm excited about this. We've got a special weekend episode. You can listen to it anytime over Memorial Day weekend. Happy Memorial Day. I'm Jerry Callahan. This is the Callahan Podcast. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Why am I stopping? No one else stops.
Can I go home?
The Jerry Callahan Podcast.